All right, let's jump right in. Ever think you've dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's, especially with something as important as your will, only to find out, oops, a technicality might throw the whole thing out?
Happens more than you'd think.
Well, this is exactly what went down in this Montana case we're diving into. And the outcome, I gotta say, it surprised even me.
Yeah, this one is a prime example of why we gotta remember it's not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law that really counts.
All right, so let's set the stage. Our main player is Jim Hall, and back in 1984, he creates a will. Pretty standard stuff, right? Fast forward to 1997, and he and his wife Betty decide to make things official with a joint will, working with their lawyer. Sounds straightforward enough.
Well, there is a twist. This joint will, it wasn't properly witnessed.
Oh, cool.
And as you know, in Montana, you gotta have at least two witnesses for a will to be considered valid.
Okay, so no witnesses, no valid will. Seems like we've hit a dead end. Case closed.
Not so fast. Jim, he was a smart guy. He actually asked the lawyer, hey, what about this draft of the joint will? Can it hold up until we get the final version all polished?
Oh, good question.
And the lawyer, he says, sure, if you sign it and I notarize it, it'll be legally binding. So they did just that.
So they were being extra careful, taking that extra step, thinking they were covered. But then what?
Here's where it gets a little messy. After signing this, let's call it the draft will, Jim tells Betty, hey, go ahead and destroy that old 1984 will. And she did.
Whoa, wait a minute. Destroyed it? That seems, I don't know, a little risky maybe?
Yeah, you could say that. And this seemingly small detail, it ends up becoming a pretty big piece of the puzzle later on.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. I bet this isn't the end of the story, right?
No, you know it's not. So sadly, Jim passes away. And his daughter from a previous marriage, Sandra, well, she decides to challenge the validity of that joint will.
Oh, here we go. Family drama and legal drama all rolled into one.
Exactly. Sandra, she wants the 1984 will, the one Betty destroyed, to be the one the court follows.
So now we've got a joint will that's kind of in limbo, a missing will, and a family feud. This is getting good.
And this is where things get really interesting, because now the court, they have to figure out, was the lack of witnesses on that joint will a fatal flaw, or is there enough to show Jim really intended for that to be his final will?
Okay, so it's a battle of the wills, literally. What does Montana law have to say about all of this?
Well, Montana law, section 72-522 to be exact, is pretty clear. At least two witnesses for a will to be valid. Seems pretty open and shut, right?
Right, seems straightforward.
But there's another section, 72-2-523, that throws a wrench into things.
All right, I'm all ears. What does this other section say?
It's called the harmless error rule.
Harmless error. That sounds interesting.
Basically, it says even if a will doesn't have all the technical boxes checked, it can still be valid if there's clear and convincing evidence that the person intended for it to be their will.
So the court has to play detective, trying to figure out what Jim truly wanted.
That's exactly it. And they can't exactly hop in a time machine and ask him directly, can they? They have to rely on what's right there in front of them.
Okay, I'm hooked. So what kind of evidence do they look at?
Well, for starters, the joint will itself, it had a clause that said all previous wills are revoked. Pretty strong statement right there.
Yeah, no ambiguity there. So the joint will is making a strong case for itself right off the bat.
And then there's that whole thing with Jim instructing Betty to destroy the 1984 will after they signed the joint will. Seems like he was pretty serious about this new document being the one that mattered.
I see where you're going with this. But hold on a second. Couldn't destroying the old will actually backfire? What if the joint will is no good because of the witness thing? Then technically, wouldn't there be no valid will at all?
You're sharp. That's exactly what Sandra argued. She said, hey, by destroying that 1984 will, Betty left her father with nothing.
Wow. Okay, this is a real nail-biter. So how did the court respond to that? Did they buy it?
They didn't. They pointed to Montana law, saying that getting rid of a will is legally considered an act of revocation. So even if the joint will had its issues, that 1984 will, well, it was gone the moment it went up in smoke.
So that destruction, it's like it flipped a script. At first it seemed like a problem, but now it's actually supporting the joint will.
It's like adding another piece of evidence that Jim, he meant for that joint will to be the one, even with its little hiccup.
Okay, so we've got the clause saying all other wills are revoked. We've got that 1984 will out of the picture. We've got this whole idea of revocation by destruction. It's all pointing to Jim's intentions. But was there anything else that sealed the deal for the court?
There's one more piece of this puzzle, Betty's testimony.
Now, wouldn't her testimony be a bit, I don't know, biased? I mean, she's the one who benefits from the joint will, right?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But her testimony actually ended up backing up the joint will. She said, both Jim and I, we believed that joint will was valid until, well, until we maybe made a new one down the line.
Interesting. So even though there were no witnesses, they just went on assuming that joint will was the real deal.
That's what the court saw. They saw it as another sign that Jim, he meant for that to be his final word.
But wait, if they were open to making another will later, doesn't that mean there was some uncertainty about the joint will?
That's exactly what Sandra, Jim's daughter, tried to argue. She said, see, they weren't really committed to that joint will.
It seems like a valid point.
The court didn't agree, though.
So how did they explain that away?
They said, look, Betty's statement, it doesn't mean there was any doubt about what Jim wanted when he signed that joint will. It just means people change, right? And maybe they would have wanted to update their will later on. That's just normal estate planning stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. A will, it's not carved in stone. People's lives change, and their will should reflect that.
Exactly. The most important thing is what Weiwei wanted at the time they signed that specific document. And in this case, everything pointed to Jim wanting that joint will, even without the witnesses, to be his final say.
So we've got the revocation clause, the destroyed will, Betty's testimony, all pointing to the joint will. Did Sandra have any other arguments against it, or did she throw in the towel at this point?
Sandra, she tried to poke some holes in the idea that the joint will really captured what Jim wanted. But like we've been saying, the court wasn't convinced. They felt like the evidence, it was pretty overwhelming. It showed what Jim intended, and sticking to that strict witness rule would have gone against his wishes.
Wow. So even though the joint will didn't technically cross all the T's and dot all the I's, the court decided to go with what Jim really wanted. That's pretty amazing.
It really shows how powerful intent can be, especially in legal matters. Sometimes the spirit of the law bumps heads with the letter of the law, and in this case, the court chose to honor the spirit, especially since we're talking about someone's final wishes.
I gotta say, this whole case is making me rethink a few things. It shows just how important it is to not just have a will, but to make sure it's done right, you know? And it really says what you want it to say.
I couldn't agree more. This case, it's like a giant flashing sign reminding us that the formalities are important, but they're not the whole story. Showing intent, that can be just as crucial, maybe even more so.
So what are the big takeaways here, especially for folks listening who are in the legal field?
For lawyers drafting wills, this case is shouting, don't forget those witnesses. I mean, it really shows what can happen if you miss seemingly small details. Even if they seem minor, legally, they're a big deal.
Yeah, you don't want to be caught slipping on something like that. But there's a silver lining here, right? It shows that even if there's a slip up with a will, it might not be a complete disaster.
That's right. If there's that clear and convincing evidence about what the person wanted, the courts, they might be willing to look past some of those procedural hiccups.
So it's like a reminder to be super careful, but also maybe a little bit of hope if things aren't perfect.
It's not a free pass to just ignore the rules, though. The best case scenario is always to have a will that's done by the book, follows all the rules. But this case shows us that the law, well, it can be flexible sometimes.
And it emphasizes how important it is to keep up with any changes in the law. Things change, interpretations change, what worked a while ago might not work now.
Especially in estate planning, the laws, they're always being tweaked, trying to keep up with how complicated life is these days. As legal pros, we got to stay on top of that, make sure we're doing things right.
This case, it reminds us that estate planning isn't just about the legal jargon and the paperwork. It's about people, their relationships, and what they want to happen to their stuff after they're gone.
Absolutely. It's about understanding your client, what they value, their family dynamics, their vision for the future. All of that should be reflected in the legal documents we create for them.
It's almost like we're legal storytellers, weaving together the threads of their life into a story that continues even after they're gone.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And as the storytellers, we got to remember the power we have. The documents we write, they can shape families for generations.
Which brings us to the heart of it all. This case wasn't just about a legal battle over a will. It was about a family dealing with loss, trying to honor their loved one's wishes.
And in the end, it was about the court saying, hey, those human wishes, the intent behind it all, that deserves to be recognized.
So where do we go from here? What should our listeners take away from this deep dive into this fascinating case? We've been talking about intent, how it was so important in that Enri State of Hall case. But this case, it kind of makes you think about some ethical stuff too, right? Especially for lawyers.
Yeah, it's a bit of a balancing act for sure. On one side, we got to fight for our clients, make sure their wishes happen. But on the other side, we got to make sure the legal system is working the way it should, following the rules.
So how do you handle that? You know, when there's a mistake in a will, but you can pretty much tell what the client wanted.
I think the big lesson from this case is be proactive, talk to your clients, and write everything down. If you're having those open conversations about their estate planning, keeping good records, then you've got a solid base for upholding their wishes, even if things get messy later on.
So basically, cover all your bases, create a paper trail that shows what the client wanted every step of the way.
Exactly. If there's ever a disagreement, that documentation, it's like your best friend. You can show that you were doing right by your client and you did everything you could to make sure their wishes were clear.
But what if, even though you did everything right, you run into a situation like the Hall case? What advice would you give to other lawyers dealing with that kind of problem?
First thing, don't freak out. The Hall case, it's just one example. Every case is different, and there are a lot of things that affect the outcome. The important thing is to stay calm and think strategically.
Okay, so what's a good first step?
Hit the books. Research the laws in your state, see what other cases have said. A state law, it could be different all over the place, so you got to make sure you're up to date on the rules that apply to your case.
Makes sense. You don't want to be using outdated info or a case that's been thrown out.
Right. Once you know the law, start gathering all the evidence you can to show what your client wanted. Old wills, letters, notes from meetings, maybe even talk to family or friends who can tell you what the person wanted.
Like putting a puzzle together, each piece gives you a better idea of the whole picture.
Exactly. Once you have the law and the evidence, you can start planning how to balance your client's wishes with the legal stuff.
Sounds like a tough job. You need to know the law and be a good strategist.
It is, and sometimes it's smart to talk to other lawyers who specialize in this kind of stuff, or even ethics experts, just to make sure you're doing things the right way.
This case also shows how important it is to talk to your clients, really clearly. They need to know what could happen if they don't do things by the book, even if their wishes seem obvious to them.
Totally agree. It's on us as lawyers to explain why things like witnesses and signing documents correctly are so important. We got to make sure clients get it. Even small mistakes can turn into big problems later.
So it's about teaching clients, helping them make good decisions about their estate planning.
Exactly. And it's about being honest with them, letting them know what could happen if their documents aren't done right.
This whole conversation just shows that estate planning, it's not just filling out forms. It's about people, families, and what they want to happen to their legacy.
Couldn't have said it better myself. As lawyers, we get to help people through this process. It's complicated, and we need to do it carefully, clearly, and always try to honor what they truly want.
Well said. This deep dive into Inria State of Hall, it's been eye-opening. We talked about estate law, intent, and the ethical stuff that comes up when the rules and people's wishes clash.
It reminds us that being a lawyer isn't just about knowing the law. It's about the people we work with and making sure we represent them honestly and fairly.
And with that, we're wrapping up our deep dive for today. Hopefully, this got you thinking. Maybe you even see estate planning in a new light now. Until next time, stay sharp. And remember, learning never stops.